Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, October 18th, 2018 at 9 o'clock a.m. This is the Board of County Commissioners meeting for the County Administrative Workshop in the BCC Conference Room. Today, present is Commissioner Hare and Commissioner Morgan. Commissioner DeYoung will not be here today. And first up, well, Connie, what are you here for?
Please.
Let's do that first.
Is
Arthur here? He is. So, if you'd be willing to come on up so we can respect your time as elected official.
Sure.
And so we're going to review fee change requests for assessor, community development, and public works, but we're starting with assessor.
No, let's just do assessor.
Just assessor. We'll get back to the after that. So.
Okay.
If you'd be willing.
I'm here till 10.
What's that?
I'm here till 10.
We'll get through it.
Thank you. So,
if you can remember everybody who comes up to introduce yourself for the microphone for the sake of the recorder.
Okay. My name is Arthur O'Hare. I'm the finance director for Josephine County.
And Connie Roach, Josephine County Assessor.
Chris Parton, Chief Deputy Assessor.
Okay. So on September 12th, I sent out a memo to all the departments requesting information back for the annual fee change process. As you may be aware, we try to make fee changes happen once a year because the process is somewhat elongated, and also it provides a consistency for the citizens and the public to know when those fees typically will change. And it's on an annual basis, effective January 1. In this case, it'll be January 1, 2019. So the assessor has a couple fees they want to change, and I've asked them to be here to explain that to the board. Today is an opportunity for the board to have their initial look at the fees. Individual liaisons may have seen them before, should have seen them before, but today is a chance for the board to, for the full board to get an initial look. The idea is you will have today and this coming week to actually refine or look at the fees or ask questions of the department managers. And next week, next Thursday, I will bring the formal packet back to the board, at which point I'm hoping that the board will approve them for the weekly business session on the 31st, I believe it is, to establish the calendar for the public hearing. So that's what today is, to introduce the fees to the board.
Great.
So the only one I have a question of, the other ones are pretty clear. I mean, they're down to the penny what they cost, and you're asking for a fee that covers the cost. But the annexation boundary change, who does that? The individual getting annexed pays that, or
the district?
Generally, it would be the district. They're the ones who are benefiting from somebody annexing into their district. The ones that I would see most likely impacted would be the Ivy Fire District, because they do annexations, but they do maybe one or two a year, so probably 60, 120 a year would be probably what their cost would be.
Yeah, because the library district right now is the one that's doing
the library district is doing a lot, and that's what's kind of spurred this. If up through 2017, we were averaging a few a year. I don't think we had a year. The highest year was like in 2011. We had seven. Other than that, it was like one or two a year. Last year we did 41.
Yeah.
So there's been a huge jump, and so it's taking a lot more time. It's all mapping time. It's our cartographer's time is what we're factoring in here. And so he has to go change maps and all the work that goes into that. So because we've had these ones this past year, we've got a good handle on what the cost is to do those. What we're proposing is for contiguous and on a sliding scale, so if you have more and they're contiguous, they would get a lower rate because the work is a little bit less when they're contiguous than when they're all one here, one there. I have talked to the city because they would be ones who could be impacted by this, And so they are all forewarned. I haven't really gotten any negative pushback at this point. And I told them all that when the public hearing is being held, that I will let them know so that if they want to speak on it, that they will have that opportunity.
What is the mechanism we have for charging the fee?
When the
petitioner
asks to be annexed, I think before you process it after the, yeah. the hearing,
the district would have to pay the fee to submit the application. All right. All right. We've been a huge proponent of having the districts pay for their fee. I testify to this. Yeah,
you have. I helped write the original.
Yeah, so we're absolutely understanding the need of having them cover their costs. Just want to make sure there's a mechanism for it.
Absolutely, and I think this is different from paying for helping to pay for the cost of running the department. This is for a specific...
Well, it's deferring, and it's just kind of understanding that this doesn't just happen for free. Somebody pays for your office.
Just as a side, we did look at our comparator counties, and the lowest per tax lot fee that someone was charging was Benton County at $130. Hmm. And the city of Grants Pass, if they have someone who requests to be annexed in, they charge them $770 for that. And that's when somebody petitions them to annex into the city. So when the city does the annexations, they'll go out. They have done in the past where they did like 500 at once. When I was talking to Aaron, he thought the way their things are now, there's no reason that they have to wait till they've got these huge groups. They could do smaller groups at a time, and that would make sense too. And
okay, this looks fine to me.
And me too.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time. We're going to get back to the calendar, and at the top of the item 1A is under Department Businesses, Public Works contract for Public Works with Pacific Electrical Contractors Inc. for the Azalea Drive Dynamic Warning Signs Project Number 289001.
Good morning, Commissioners. Rob Brandis, Public Works. It seems like you've seen us a few times. You have. We had the initial agreement with ODOT for the funds. We had the contract for the design, and now we have the contract for the build. To give you a bit more backstory to refresh, federal funds are made available for high-risk rural roads, and they get into metrics of how many crashes, how many cars per day, those kinds of things. This was identified as a candidate. So once that money is made available, it's exchanged with the state to cut the federal strings, which are typically onerous, as you know, and we're left with a budget for a project. The initial agreement, actually, I'll give you a bit of a flow chart here. That'll help you lay it out how we got here. So the initial agreement amount is at the top here. It was $186,000, and the exchange on this one, this is similar to our chip seal every year where we do a 94% match, except this one is 91 and change. So we lose the 14% off the top, leaving 171 for a project. The contract I was in here seeing you for in the spring with Kittleson to do the engineering was $36,000. We got a bit nervous. Their construction projection was about 160 with some contingencies, probably 175. Luckily, as you see in your packet in front of you, Pacific Electrical came in at 139 and change. So leaving us a project total of about 176, so our out-of-pocket will be about $4,300 on this for what I think is a fantastic project. This is a tough one to quantify because it's not preventing, a fence getting knocked over, smaller stuff. It may be preventing one catastrophic crash for every 10 years, but it's tough to put a price on something like that. But if it stops even one, that to me is a great investment. The basic operability of the project is going to be some embedded pavement loops on Robertson Bridge Road, just like you see downtown here. That will trigger a actuated flashing beacon about 500 feet back, both directions on Azalea, notifying north and southbound drivers that there is potentially oncoming traffic. We've given the contractor through January to build. I suspect it'll be quite a bit quicker than that. This is a fairly straight-ahead job. Also of note, the apparent low bid is a Medford contractor, which is surprising. I didn't know that anybody south of Salem might take a shot, but it's going to be locally done and run, so that's a good thing.
That's great.
We did have a second bid from Lance Electric out of Salem. They were about 151, so two bids within 8% of each other, so we're happy with the bid process. And if you're willing, I would like to ask for an actual signage today just to get this thing moving. Last week, no admin kind of got us a bit behind, and I just assume let them get cranking. They're ready to go on it.
Sure.
So
we talked about this a lot, so I make a motion to approve without objection project number 289001.
I'll second.
Contract for Public Works. The Pacific Electrical Contractors Incorporated for the Azalea Drive Dynamic Warning Signs.
Now that he's done, I'll second that.
Does anybody want a full plans? No?
Okay. Any further comments?
No.
I think the only thing I foresee is that people will start seeing it as a reason to run the red light because there's no flashing coming.
And so
I can blow through that light because it's safe and clear, and it might actually increase the amount
there's
of
There's always a concern, kind of like below.
Because I wouldn't have done that
no.
as a kid.
And it's like making a new road that's, you know, twice as wide and brand new pavement. Everybody says, man, this feels safer. I'm going to go. And just one more note. Once this project's in place, we're going to work up a IGA with ODOT to maintain this light just because we have no reason to keep this kind of an electrical contractor on standby. We've got about five lights, Plum Tree, Pinecrest, the covered bridge. We've got about five, so you'll be seeing an IGA for that early
sure.
next year.
That was one of my questions, is what is the maintenance or ongoing?
Shouldn't be a lot, but yeah, when that stuff breaks, it's a pain in the neck, and our guys are stuck doing research to find 12-year-old light lights.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 2-0.
Great.
We will get that signed for you today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rob.
Next up is community development under Economic Development Fund internship request.
I think Larry's part of this too, right?
Yes. Larry. Come on up, Larry.
Absolutely.
You want to make the commute?
Yes. I do have a dog in the fight here.
That's a great.
It's getting there.
Yeah.
Get the Millard Fillmore look going on there.
Good.
So this is a request to use some of the
economic... Don't forget to introduce yourself for the record.
Sure. Julie Schmelzer, Director of Community Development.
Whatever.
I've never had to do that at one of these meetings.
It's actually probably a good practice, Mr. Graves.
Larry Graves, Director for Josephine County Airports.
Okay, so this is an economic development request. It is a request for basically supporting workforce development and some activities at the airport to help the airport. And it would come out of our economic development fund. And what it is at the airport, at the Illinois Valley Airport, they do not have a record of all of the takeoffs and landings or detail of the businesses that are using the airport like we do in Grants Pass. With that data, we could increase our ability for grants and have a better grasp on the economic development potential that we actually have available out there. Right now, to determine what's going on out there, Larry would have to go through it and watch a video, a film. He actually has to go to the IV airport and watch this film. What this would do is, this is working with the Illinois Valley High School to have some interns actually sit there and review the tape and get us the data that we need. So it's helping the airports. Helps me because if Larry gets grant money, it's less money out of the economic development account. And it also helps the students learn skills at the Illinois Valley High School.
And I'll add, the system, when we set it up, it was intended to be able to monitor the security cameras from a single point at both airports. And we've never been able to make that work. Our contractor, SOS, has to work in close conjunction with our IT department, and we have never been able to make that work where we can access the stored video that's on, you know, at physically located at the Illinois Valley Airport where we capture that data. Mm-hmm. And Julie's right. What we need to be able to do is to go through fast forward and just count the physical numbers of operations, we call them, a takeoff or a landing, so that we have documented proof to give to the FAA that we have a certain number of takeoffs and landings. And that is astronomically increased over what it used to be because of the Captain Drake's flight school that's out there and the recent wildfire activity where, you know, we've had helibases 5 out of 7 years with just huge numbers of operations each year. So we have that data. The problem is... analyzing it.
So
this would be very helpful.
Like a year of video that somebody can fast forward through.
Yep.
Already.
Yeah.
In the queue.
Yeah. Yep.
How many years? Maybe a year.
We've had the camera system installed for 3 years now, and so we have a 4 terabyte. It's a quad box that DVR, and we can go back. And the cameras are motion activated, so they only turn on when they see something moving in their field of view, day or night. Typically, an aircraft taxiing by or landing has aircraft, landing lights, etc. Or they turn on the runway lights so they can see it, because otherwise it's just a void out there. You can't land at that airport without lights. So, it's very economical. We have a lot of data, more than a year probably.
Are you managing that, or would she?
Larry would oversee that. I would coordinate with the school to make sure that we get interns with appropriate skill level. And
yeah, I think once you train one up, they probably want to be able to.
And who monitors on site?
Well, Jason is there at least half the time. I mean, right now, he's my full-time operations manager who is shuttling back and forth between Grants Pass and Illinois Valley since we lost Vance. We used to have 2 full-time people for operations work at the airports, and now we're down to 1, and we're kind of at a critical point in terms of person power.
The other thing is, with doing it through an internship, the school assumes the liability if there's any problems versus if we would hire, a person to do it. So.
I think it's a really useful and economical use of the economic development funds.
What I see is that we're, investing. We've got this grant, cumulative, like a couple $100,000 that we're going to be investing in the infrastructure out there. And really, without this information, for what?
Right.
We think that there's a lot of, we know that there's a lot of activity out there, certainly with the fires. That's a little bit separate from what I think we're going after.
Yeah.
That's going to happen whether or not we do the count or not. But I think it adds to how vital that airport is to.
Well, yeah, and I mean, the demand is there. There's the argument of build it and they will come, and governments typically don't like to do that because you have to invest and you don't really, it's at risk, okay? But we have a guy who bought a jet and he has to keep it in Medford because he doesn't have a hangar. So, I mean, we want to develop that airport, and I've got candidate projects and buildings, et cetera, that we have a demand.
Does this feed into your master plan development right
Absolutely.
Now? Wouldn't that be advantageous to have that while you're finalizing those?
Well, the master plan work is focusing on Grants Pass, but it's always helpful to have that information, and that goes into our...
You said it was for both airports.
Master plan is Grants Pass only.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Master plan update.
Okay.
Yeah.
I do know, in talking with Marta from Business Oregon, they like to see it when you leverage dollars to get more dollars. So if we can use $5,000 to get $250,000, that's a good thing for us. So.
The projects that we have in the pipeline for Illinois Valley Airport, for example, that we can't get right now because the FAA says, well, you don't have any activity out there. It's not justified. Full-length taxiway. We have no taxiway at that airport. If you need to go from the north end of the airport to the south end, you pull out onto the runway and you trundle down the runway at 5 miles an hour for the next 5 minutes. It's not safe. We need that taxiway. And the FAA says it's not justified. We don't want to spend $3 million or whatever the number would be to build that 5,000-foot, full-length taxiway because there's no activity out there. Sleepy little place, That's their concept. And I can talk until I'm blue in the face about how busy it actually is, and I can introduce them to the flight school owner and all the students, and I can show them video, et cetera, but until I actually have documented evidence that we have that number of takeoffs and landings on an annual basis, it's just talk, So this is going to be very helpful, and I think it's a pretty good expenditure, pretty good way to spend that money.
I do want to clarify too. The request is only up to $5,000. So if it costs more than that to do all 3 years, we're not going to have all 3 years. So we're only going to expend the $5,000 and see how far we get.
That's a lot of intern time. $5,000.
Depends how fast they go through the video, I think. Yeah.
Well, if it's just motion activated.
Yeah, it's pretty concentrated.
Yeah, it should be doable.
The only other thing I'd throw out there for you both is that Daniela Bivens has been contracted by Public Health and looking at grants, and the county has grant software. Nobody in the county is looking at it. It's a ghost town, she said.
I'm looking at it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I use a better source. I have a better source
okay,
that I use.
Good.
I'm just saying that there's a source of grants, and it's not being utilized. And so if we need to ask her to do that, to be looking for stuff, if there's stuff appropriate for y'all,
yep.
or if there's a way to get in there, but I just want to encourage that if there is other points of financing that we are maybe not aware of that we need to be checking.
Oh, I appreciate
about.
That. Yeah, and I try to be or make myself aware of all the money that's out there. And as you may be aware, I'm constantly searching for those kinds of grants and applying for them, and occasionally finding an acorn, you know, so to speak. So yeah.
I don't have any objection to this.
No.
Mr. DeYoung is the liaison. He's been briefed on this.
Oh, yeah, we've talked about the need for the accounts, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Does it need to go to weekly business? So,
here.
Yeah, that would be fine with me.
Make a motion to approve the application for the $5,000 up to for the IV airport.
I'll second that. Any further discussion?
No.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 2-0.
This one has the original signatures. If you could give it to Wendy.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah. Good.
So up next is transit, Josephine County Purchase Order 2018-1010. We're going to try to keep moving through folks on stuff, just so you know, because Commissioner Harrod has to leave at 10. So if we're not done by then, we are done, because our quorum's gone. So.
Scott Chancy, Transit Program Supervisor, Josephine County. So, all right, we're ready to go now. So we finally have a PO in place, or I need to have it signed, and then we will submit that and purchase off the Washington State Department of Enterprise purchase agreement with Complete Coach Works for the purchase of two electric vehicles.
You were here a week or two ago, two weeks ago. So if anybody wants all of the background, you spent 20 minutes, I would say, reviewing the elements of the purchases of the two electric buses. So we don't need to go through it all today.
Okay.
It sounds great.
That's what
Thank
I figured.
You for doing the diligence. I think we put you through the traps and made you answer a lot of questions.
It's budgeted.
It's not budgeted.
Okay.
Have to, and the reason it wasn't budgeted is it's not because I didn't have the money. It was I didn't know when the vehicle would arrive. So we'll have to do a supplemental budget. So typically.
No, I was more thinking of does it go to consent or does it go to admin?
Oh.
But it'll go to admin because it's not budgeted.
Okay.
But we can move it forward to next Wednesday.
Good enough.
Thank
All
you,
right.
sir.
Thank you.
Okay, human resources, airport grounds worker job description, and emergency service outreach and education coordinator job description. All three of y'all might as well come up and we'll just do one after another.
Morning, Commissioner.
J.J. Schofield, HR Director.
Larry Graves, Director of Josephine County Airports.
And Sarah Lubreck, the Emergency Manager.
You're not a director?
No. I've never had that in my title.
My title? We switched programs. About a year ago, there were only about three that were managers that were not directors. There was parks, facilities, and the airports, too.
Veterans?
Airports, yeah. Veterans.
I will have to have HR work on that.
Yeah. I will clarify my title and be sure of myself next time I interview myself.
That's great.
Okay, we'll let you move on.
All right, so the first position that we're looking at today is a airport position we looked at a few weeks ago, and there were some questions about whether this is the most cost-effective methodology to address his needs, and so we brought Larry in to really address that.
So what were the questions as I was not here 2 weeks ago at that admin meeting?
Well, it was more, you know, this is a position, is there other ways that you could get that work done outside of hiring a position, you know, contract it out, or...
Yeah, I don't... I think I had those concerns.
Okay.
I feel as though I did. And
yeah.
And I don't remember what...
Specifically?
I don't.
Well,
sorry.
That's okay. It's fine. I mean, we have had, at one point, the empire has risen to four full-time equivalents at the airports department. We did lose one full-time person who was... Yeah, Vance. And so we're down to three, and we have basically one ops person, that's Jason, who's covering both airports.
Yes.
We are hiring temporary workers from Barrett to fill in where that can happen, but that you know, each time we get a new person from Barrett, then there's a whole new training cycle
sure.
that takes place.
Yeah.
And we decided months ago that it would be advantageous to have a permanent part-time position at an A9 level who could be trained and supervised basically constantly by Jason and get to the point where they could work autonomously at one airport while Jason was at the other. And we really need that ability because Jason can't be everywhere at once. And we, you know.
So are you reducing what's on your books today?
We are way below our Schedule D. We're tens of thousands underspent on labor.
No, I know, but are you reclassifying the current
yeah.
job
yeah.
down to this level?
Yeah, it was an A10 before for the airport maintenance tech. Mm-hmm. This is an A9 airport grounds worker.
Yeah.
I don't want to say groundskeeper because he's going to be doing, or she is going to be doing work that is essentially in support of what our operations manager
sure.
is out there doing
sure.
every day. So
I
they'll
think
be,
I remember now, and
yeah.
the board had delegated Commissioner DeYoung as liaison,
yes.
you two, to sit down and do that cost analysis of does it make sense to hire in correction crews from time to time like Parks does occasionally to mm-hmm. fill in those, you know, massive, let's just get it done, and it's more than just a part-time person. That person works for 2 weeks to get it done.
Yeah.
The correction crew gets it done in a day.
Yeah.
And so
I use the correction crews. I
yeah,
have in the past.
Yeah, it was just making sure that we've done that evaluation because when I looked at the job description, it seemed like those kinds of things. And I understand the autonomous trying to get there. I know you've evaluated these. You know, this is your program and stuff. But
well, I know
without
that, yeah.
the backstory of knowing that all of those other options that we would support if
mm-hmm.
they were evaluated had been done, and then because you weren't here to shed light on that.
Yeah,
so,
I apologize for that.
No, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's perfectly fine. We just want to make sure that you know your funds are finite and so valuable when leveraged for other stuff that
mm-hmm.
if they're utilized and you do as efficiently as possible, then we're good to go.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But if you see that this is the right way to go, Mr. Graves, then
yeah.
that's the right way to go. I just needed to hear from somebody that
yeah.
those other boxes had been checked. Yep, we looked at that. There
we actually is. Take advantage of
yep.
Nearly everything that you've discussed here.
Right.
And, you know, when the work crews are available, we bring them in and we'll do, you know, rock clearing from, you know, the entire side of the runway, for example.
What do you mean when they're available? I mean, because
they're not always available.
So you ask and say, I need them twice a month or I need them once a week,
mm-hmm.
and they
and
say...
And then I hear back, and I have in the past, we don't have a supervisor available to be with them.
Or they're out on contract for something else.
Sure.
Parks experiencing
there's,
that.
Those things happen, and of course that's...
Their contracts are actually what they
yeah.
work at first.
Mm-hmm.
They're available when...
Yeah. When there's nothing else
not
going on.
Those
yeah.
other things.
Yep.
So
yep.
that you kind of got to get on the calendar, I guess, or something.
Oh, yeah. And we try to anticipate those needs. And,
yeah.
You know, we have cyclical work.
Right.
And there's a lot of work in the spring, you know, basically from March through October.
Sure.
That is of a nature that we don't do that work in the wintertime.
That's another reason why I was thinking the part-time person all the time might not be as efficient as having the seasonal elements of,
correct.
Like, being able to uptick the,
yeah.
you know.
That's exactly my plan. That's
okay.
exactly my plan, yeah. And
right.
so we're hoping, and we're going to discuss this,
we'll
you know,
Jason
to the limitations that we can. Yeah, I'll work it out with JJ. But and Jason Davis knows exactly what he needs and how best to deploy that asset.
Great.
And I trust him implicitly. The guy's very good.
Well, in the last 7 years, I remember when you came on board and, you know, the ends of the runways hadn't been mowed and all of this other stuff had not been done. We had to hire a dozer or something, a flail mower.
Yeah.
It's not in that state. There's a constant care of maintenance that you guys perform. So
right. Well, we are still dealing with decades
backlog.
Of deferred maintenance.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we have hangar doors you can't open.
Right.
That makes it kind of tough to lease them.
I'm good on this one.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mr. Graves.
Thank you very much.
In the future, I think I've said this before, whenever we're discussing job descriptions, I would appreciate, and this isn't yours, this is JJ's
sure.
responsibility, bring in an org chart. Tell me where we are. Tell me where we want to go, because
yeah.
I don't have your program. Yours is small. But knowing that
yeah,
we're looking
yeah.
to reclassify that existing maintenance person to something of a part-time nature or whatever, wherever we're going from to wherever we're transitioning to, forgive me, but an illustration is worth 1,000 words that we don't have to spend time on. Would be helpful. That's not an orchard.
Well, and I guess my question on this one, where I'm okay with you doing this, but you went from a full-time person down to a part-time person. Why not two part-time people, one at each airport?
Because I have no way to supervise two part-time people.
Okay.
And that's a degree that's 50% less than what he's asking for.
Yeah.
I don't know that you could go there.
I don't think I could.
A half-time reduction in saving some resources by going one more half-time, right? That would.
Well, he's paying at a higher level of full-time that he lost, so to now replace it with a half-time.
Saying keep the full-time and break that person up into two part-time people.
Correct. So you have one at each airport, so the maintenance is done, and then Jason can oversee both. They're part-time. You can have one work in the morning, one work in the afternoon,
whatever. And we have discussed that as well, and Jason and I both agree, he suggested and I agree with him, that we should hire this person at a part-time, permanent part-time level at first, and then see how it goes, and then if it turns out that we need to increase that to a full-time position, that's a much easier step. And then we can use that person at both airports or however
Maybe.
We need
the
to.
The amount of time lost in driving 2 hours to airports.
I know that.
You know,
that's what Jason's doing right now, every day.
So to me, putting a part-time at each where you can get work done at one and one at the other would be more time efficient than having a full-time travel between the two. But it's you
Understood.
Guys have to make that call. I just
And it also depends on where they live and everything else. I mean, we were not going to hire a crazy person who's willing to drive out from Ashland, for example, every day. I mean, who would do that? You know.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. You don't have to pay travel time when it's a part-time person who's got one work site.
Yes.
That's on their time for travel time. But when they're being paid to go back and forth between two, we're losing effective time in travel.
Sure. Well, and if we can find a person who lives in Cave Junction, and I like to hire locally if I can, then that's the person we use at that airport. And then we cross-train, and if there's the need, we bring them over or whatever. But,
Great.
Okay. Thank you very much.
The next position is kind of the final step in the third position within the emergency management program. We came up with this job description for the outreach and education coordinator.
And just for clarification, I have my job description. My official job title is emergency services manager. And the second position is assistant emergency services manager. So we may need to change that if you prefer. So, as you know, this initial discussion was had during the interview process. It was discussed amongst the three commissioners that there was a need and a desire to move forward with looking at adding a half-time FTE to emergency management to do public outreach and education. And we've worked over the last couple weeks to create a job description that fits the desires of the board and fits within the county structure. And I think what JJ has is what we've been looking for. So there were a couple of tweaks that I'll let JJ describe from the last draft we brought. And I think we're just where we need to be.
Sure. I mean, there's fairly nominal changes from the last one. In looking at the comprehensive program, we just wanted to add some emergency management specific things. So the job description was purposefully broad, but we just added a few real specific things that are going to help, foster the mission of emergency management advocacy instead of just general education.
And I think it's important to note that the job description is based on a full-time person, but we are only proposing that we hire somebody half-time to do that, to do as much of that work as possible. It's not the workload indicated in the job description is enough for a full-time person, but we are only requesting 0.5 at this point.
You read it? You're the liaison?
Yeah, well, we talked about it, and he was... Yes, I'm good with this.
Okay.
So we had we borrowed the initial job description from Washington County, and there was a second one that was kind of like, no, this pieces need to be in there, and so I gave the blessing to move forward. So talking with both of them.
Back to that, not an org chart, but the duties, delegation, what have you. I thought that was really good. I can reiterate, you know, I just did. That's going to prove really helpful, I think, where we're not, or we're defining duties, because this is a big transition from really where the program sits right now, not where it's historically been. We've had two FTEs in that program before, but now having 2.5, you know, and it's in a good shape funding-wise with the contract with the city. I like the job description being written for a full-time position at a half-time rate with the expectation that's how we fill it right now. But if we can look to contract out with neighboring counties to fill that job description on a full-time basis, really, I know that there's everything you do is really, really important. It is the most important things in your program. To me, having the liaison element with the community and getting them to a very much more satisfactory level of preparedness is a priority for me to see that the community is ready to go in the event of emergency, not just you or not just of our staff. So I think this fills all of the gaps really, really well, and I think it's going to be good for the program. In order to make this higher, we have a pre-determined potential applicant. I think I'd like to hear a little bit about how that's facilitated. And in my mind, I didn't participate in the interview section that this person is actually going to be fulfilling, which is that public presentation portion. And I think for me to feel really confident that besides the interview went really, really well, just there was another applicant whose background probably fit the position that we were interviewing for, I wouldn't mind if that was integrated into, you know, let's have that presentation before the board at a certain time. Does that make sense?
It does, but it's not required as far as, I mean, we were prepared to do it a couple weeks ago, and it was ready to go for that day. But being this is somebody that it's within our own department, it's a simple title change. We've worked out the with HR and finance how the pay structure works, and to make sure that that's all dealt with is and so that it's not a matter of. It actually, we've worked out all those details, so it will be an even flow.
Pretty simple, because this is both general fund, you know, you're not mixing pools.
Correct, and essentially, they've worked out a system that will keep it easy, so as far as the tracking of time and everything else like that, it is straightforward and easy.
Okay.
I would be happy to do that presentation, or to have that done, you know, to arrange for that. I also know that we're prepared to move forward.
Sure.
And have everything in place to do that now, that this is the last step of moving forward to do that transition.
Well, I'm comfortable with this, and I think my expectation was before the end of the month, if that's possible either way or at some point. I think that it would be advantageous and good due diligence of the board to probably just see that.
Mm-hmm.
I have every confidence that it was really good because it got the stellar gold star coming out of that section of the
and
by everybody.
I've actually seen teaching in other avenues outside of emergency management from that candidate.
Great.
So, but I, like I said, we were prepared to go a couple weeks ago, and we'll be prepared to go again.
Yeah, getting it all.
Can this move forward now?
Absolutely.
Okay, so as far as the job description, bless that to go forward.
Yeah, we can do it right here, so. I don't know that I need a motion to approve it. If we do, I just so move that we approve the job title and description for the Outreach and Education Coordinator.
I'll second that. Any further discussion?
No.
All those in favor?
Yes.
Aye. And motion carries 2-0.
Mark, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next is Finance Report Resolution 2018-057 in the matter of Forest Reserve Fund Purpose of Use of Funds.
Yes, thank you. Arthur O'Hare, Finance Director.
Hurry up, Arthur. We only have
20 minutes. He thinks he's getting out of here before the shake alert, so no one gets pictures of him under the table.
I saw those. I don't
even,
So we've got, this resolution is, I'll say more of a housekeeping measure. The board had discussed and approved back in September the supporting a specific aspect of the Veterans Service Program with Forest Trust dollars. And so this resolution is simply the housekeeping measure of
allowing it to be used,
allowing the fund to be defined in a way that would approve the moving of some funding to veterans. So that's the idea behind this resolution, housekeeping formality.
It is, however, if I remember correctly, I think Commissioner Morgan has reservations about utilizing those dollars for this purpose. Is that still the case, or is there something we can do to
satisfy those? I didn't oppose us moving forward. I don't want it to be a permanent thing. I want us to figure out a different funding source for veterans down the road. I still am concerned about the efficacy of this fund long term, and I don't want to lose our juvenile fund again. I don't want it to be that we've so over encumbered this that we lose it. I absolutely 100% support our veterans program and want to see that continue to reach more people.
So what are the things I want to solve this, and I think it's doable in your mind. If it is doable in your mind, I don't want to try to do something if it's impossible. But my thought was how many years of reserves at the current appropriation levels will satisfy? I mean, nothing is forever and nothing is guaranteed. But for me, I just want to, if I can have some indication of what that threshold is, we can aspire to some sort of a goal of saying, okay, well, we could potentially permanently put this or share the funding elements required for it or something else, guarantee it by some other revenue stream. Mm-hmm. That those would be the priority. At what level it drops below a certain reserve level, that those other, veterans or something else is first removed. There's a prioritization. I'm looking for what is that threshold of certainty that I can try to get to.
I hear you.
What's it going to take to put you in this car?
I hear you. I hear you. So the color is wrong. I might want leather interior. No, I'm just kidding.
I can structure the language with Arthur and the trust to probably try to satisfy those.
Well, and I think where I was coming from is I kind of saw this as what you see in like a university system where somebody does a benevolent fund and only the interest is spent each year. You keep that base foundation so it is in perpetuity.
Sure.
And in my mind, I wanted us to do something similar with this fund, that we have a base level that we are going to make sure that if we have 5 years of this again, and we've gone through 20% of our forest in the last 10 years, mm-hmm. what happens if this continues, that we do have a cusp of there's nothing more that can go against that because we're not even going to cover our own forest costs right now. But at the very least, in my mind, that we would keep that balance, and I haven't talked with Arthur or come up with that number yet, but in my mind, I wasn't looking for just a 5-year. I was looking for something that we can say, let's make this in a perpetuity program.
I hear what you're saying.
A sustained yield cutting process.
So, but I hear it. You're looking at the element that there's got to be the funds there. If you think about that trust as the resource that's on the landscape, even if it burns again, even if we lose 30% next year, we have a tremendous fire season, there's still the asset there. And so you're just exchanging the asset for trees that are on the ground for a resource that generates a revenue stream. The challenge with this one is that there was some a lot of other fires that happened, some challenging ground to get to. Doesn't mean that the other 5 million board feet won't sell at some point. We're going to look at marketing that again before the end of the year. So you're just exchanging one commodity for a resource someplace else. So it's actually what you're looking to achieve is there, but it's a little bit harder to visualize as opposed to $100 million sitting in the bank. Mm-hmm. It's actually out on the landscape.
Which, unfortunately, is under threat every year with how things are going. And so I think that's part of just my caution and wanting to see a couple years of progress. We're only a year into funding the juvenile program back, that I didn't want to give just commit everything before we see what are we a couple years experience before we go down that path.
Establish a threshold. I mean, I really wouldn't want to go over that $1 million. We have history of generating $250,000 of revenue under a totally different scheme without knowing what our inventory was and not operating on a sustained yield.
Yeah.
And so there's I've looked at this at the bookends with, I mean, and $1 million is the right place to be. You won't want to go over that. And I think it's sustainable regardless of what you're,
okay.
You know. So I don't know how much I can say without you.
Could we put some language in there that puts it in cap? The problem is all right, so we have $1 million cap.
I don't mind prioritizing, saying that there will be X number of dollars to fund the juvenile shelter, you know.
And the discussion is great, and the points are great. This
isn't the point of what you're hearing.
Yeah, this resolution is not establishing or even
unless we
funding.
Put another thing in there to say
parameters.
And I think there's a different route to take when regarding fund balance and the use of fund balance and or the reserve balances and what those thresholds are. I see that as a different and part of a larger policy that we're
I don't want it in a policy. I want it codified in a minimum of the resolution that authorizes it, because this says we're not going to review it except every 10 years.
You should not be putting budgetary
restriction
or budgetary promises
but what
in
about
a resolution.
Prioritization that first forestry
and that's what I'm saying
expenses,
I think is a
then juvenile and then
it's a different approach than simply saying veterans or veterans only. I think there's a larger issue that I need to address.
Let's hold this discussion over. I think I'm prepared to satisfy the element of appropriating dollars today.
This does not appropriate any dollar. This resolution, this just allows the fund to be used,
yes.
But it would normally be through a budgetary process, the annual budget process, that you would then decide, yes, we're going to use forest reserve trust funds to fund X amount to the Veterans Service Program. And it doesn't have to be any specific dollar amount either. That's part of the budget process and part of the budget discussion. So this simply allows the fund to be used.
Mr. Morgan's concerns. And see if, so let's just step back and say we're going to discuss this next week. I need to be on time for my. And I apologize. I would have liked to have chatted with you about this beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
But I was unavailable last week and then.
Okay.
I didn't see you yesterday. So.
Well, the board did discuss the funding for the current year of
the
Veteran Service.
The challenge is that isn't here.
Right.
He and I kind of move forward on this thing. And
okay.
Not without to move forward.
Yeah, and I'm not opposed to that.
I think you want it all
right.
in the package, and I don't mind
okay.
that. That's actually probably diligent. So
if
there isn't something pressing with that today, Arthur, is that possible?
No. I do want to remind the board, though, that back on September 4th, that our Veterans Service Director was here, presented a proposal, and the board did approve $100,000.
Does that make any difference today for next week?
What I want to do is I want to separate the two issues. The resolution establishing the fund says these are the uses that that this fund can be used for. It doesn't establish limitations, parameters, why we can send money to juvenile, how much we send to juvenile, how much we give for the forestry program, or at what levels we fund forestry. I think it would be misplaced to do the same thing for veterans or to single out veterans in this resolution. I think there are other resolutions that we need to put forward to establish fund balance, reserves, uses of reserves, hierarchy of spending, those types of things is a different context.
Okay, go ahead.
Just is that Arthur and I work on this.
Sure, I think it needs to be done. Yes.
Sounds good.
And it'll hopefully address all of the things that you're looking to do not.
Yeah.
So then you can see the whole thing, and we've addressed everything as opposed to trying to do that one thing just today.
Right.
That's okay.
Right.
So we're going to move on to review fee change requests for community development and public works.
Yes, and we have both the director for community development and public works here. Again, this is an annual process that we do to establish new fees as of January 1st. Today's meeting is to provide the board, the full board, the packet of requests for changes and allow the board to ask questions, the goal being that next Thursday all those questions and follow-up concerns would be addressed and the board would move forward to the weekly business session of the 31st to establish the public hearing for fee changes. So in your packet, you'll see both the community development fee change requests and the public works fee change requests. And I do have Parks sent a one this week that I would like to introduce and provide you copies of.
I also had one that came up yesterday in speaking with Augustus, which we'll have to talk about when we get to mine.
Okay.
So yours is up first in the packet. I am curious, Commissioner DeYoung and I, after meeting with Craig Dent, asked that you work with him to see about addressing some of the concerns that he had, and how were those addressed in these change proposals?
Okay, so what we had done is we had sent in, Nora actually handled the project, she sent an email out to every contractor that we had in our database and explained to them we were going to be looking at revising our fee schedule. Did they have any comments? Did they have any feedback? And the only one that responded back to us was Craig Dent, and his comments were that he thought charging $2,700 for a mass gathering was too much money. We've never charged $2,700, and we don't have any plans on charging $2,700.
Where does that come from?
I have no idea.
So the number $2,700 is arbitrary that he didn't find in?
I thought it was $2,000.
Yeah, he wrote, I have his email right here, that he thought $2,700 was too high, so I don't know where he got that from.
Isn't it $2,000 or something?
It's $2,000 for the large, yeah. And I wrote back to him and I said,
potential permits that would be required that are not satisfied just under a mass gathering? Like you just need a mass, you need a mass gathering, but you also need a road access permit or blah, 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 that you might be thinking is a cumulative?
I'm not sure where it came from. I wrote back to him and I said, we don't plan on doing that, you know, but he never wrote back after that. I never heard back from him when I said, hey, we don't plan on charging $2,700.
Is it $2,000 for the 3,000 people or more?
Yes.
Then I have no problem with $2,000. The number of agencies and things that have to review a mass gathering of 3,000 people or more, if you can't handle $2,000, then you're not doing that project right.
Right.
3,000 people is a massive amount of people that are not in a commercial space. Yeah, that has a huge impact on the neighborhood. Everybody needs to be, you know, at the table.
And by statute, we can charge up to $5,000.
Yeah.
We charge two. We haven't changed that for the large ones. So I don't know where he got the $2,700. He also had a concern with the tech plan review fee, but we had explained to him when he was here that day that was something that we were working on, and then, of course, we passed the amendment that said we would accept the letter. And the chart you have before you does show that tech plan review would not be charged. So yes, we sent it out to all contractors. Craig did respond.
He was concerned. His biggest thing he presented to Commissioner DeYoung and I was having a separate permit cost when you're submitting one set of plans and you have a house and a separated garage that you're paying separate fees versus them being attached. If it was attached, they'd be one thing. If they're 100 feet apart, you're paying two fees.
That has been a resounding, and I felt as though it was a historic deviation. We used to do, like, a project had a development permit, and now you were requiring, within the last year or two, a development permit for each. And there was I remember hearing a justification for it, given separate types of structures.
So what we've run into, and one of the problems we found since I've been here, is if you authorize, I'm just going to say, three structures on one permit, and one is out of compliance, and you revoke the permit, you're revoking the permit on all three.
Well, can't you just reduce the permit for, you know, you've got four elements, you're not permitted for that fourth, you're just permitted for three.
Yeah. We don't have a way to do that in our current code. The other thing is we were getting a lot of complaints, like, why does somebody get, the best example is, 14 greenhouses for $300.
And that's not one project. I guess for me, this what exasperated that changed it a year ago was the marijuana industry, where you had somebody coming in and putting 100 greenhouses and asking for an address for each of them, and all that work going into it. And yeah, that perpetuates. But it didn't fix where you have a developer coming in on one property. They put together one plan, and they're paying for four different fees. And our feedback that day in that meeting is we want it fixed and work with Dent. He's a reasonable guy. He might not always present that way with staff, but he...
The direction I got was to work on the fee schedule. So I think what you're talking... I interpret what you're talking about to be a policy issue. But if you want to have us to have a fee schedule, if there's one structure, it's 300, two structures, it's 600, three structures, it's... I mean, we can do that in this?
We had a developer come in who said, if I put this same plan and the house was attached, I'm paying this amount. If it was over here, it's this. And we said, see if you can work with them to come up with a proposal. We're not saying that $300 is appropriate for 14 greenhouses because the scope of work is blah, 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 blah. We even said that there's a possibility of a tiered rate because of how, you know, or this and that. But... we did suggest working with him, and so he went in and said he didn't feel like that was happening. That's the email we got that you replied to. Yeah, the $2,700, I didn't know where it was come from because I didn't have the fee schedule in front of me. But he also did include in there that he still thinks that original project site, and then if it was attached, it'd be different. So that is something that we had asked
to be
able to do.
Fees need to be proportional to the cost of the project, and so I think... there are efficiencies with doing multiple buildings on one project. So maybe that's how we address it, is if you have, you know, ancillaries or something, I'm going to leave that to you to figure out how do you make, because there's efficiencies there, and they shouldn't be charged independently for that base foundational.
I understand with Mr. Dent's complaint. My understanding was that he had come back and wanted to add a structure. And after 30 days, we don't amend the permit because it's already scanned and sent to the assessor, and then you have to go back and rechange it. So
that's why you have
if you want me to look at a sliding scale on multiple permits, I can
that
do that?
Multiple development permits on one project or something. Okay. So.
And then we're going to figure out the legal way how you would revoke one without affecting the entire permit. So it'll be some work, and we'll try to do that by when Arthur has this hearing.
A number of people complain about who are doing a home-style project, not that it just seems really odd. And
we really don't get a request too often to, other than greenhouses. It's rare that you get a request to, most people don't build a house and a garage at the same time.
Really?
No. If it's an attached garage, they do. But most people do not
or
apply
any
for...
any kind of an outbuilding? Because no. I can think of five people who just built a house, and they all did that same thing. And they're
a house
in my
and
mind,
then a
and they're in the
garage?
County. Yep, I can name them right now.
Usually
they didn't get a permit.
That's probably what they do, is they build a house, and they don't get a permit for the outbuilding.
Usually what people do is they build the house, and then they come back. The house has an attached garage, and then usually they come back later for an outbuilding once they're there. For
they
us.
They build an outbuilding first.
Yep.
Because they store all their stuff in it, and then they build the house.
Yep.
Well, see,
my cousin
they
just did the same
they
thing.
Can't do that, so
that's,
I know that that's
what
so we
they
have
do.
A problem right there.
Well,
but
so
as you know, but
we have a problem there, because that's what developers are looking to do.
But see, that we addressed this past year. We did create that policy that said if they have the slab poured and substantial progress towards that house, we would allow them to proceed with the garage and build the garage.
Right.
So we have addressed that.
And now that's a moving target. I want to see it delineated, because I've had people who are like the most legitimate people I know who say, we built the foundation, we put that in, and then they said we had to put the walls up. And then you can build the, you can
finish we have that in writing. So that would surprise me. Now, I do know, so we used to say, no outbuilding at all until that house is up. And we went back and said, as long as you have that other building started, we'll let you put the garage up.
Right.
We'll trust you. What we are seeing is they're not building the house. So, but we do have that, and we do have that as a writing for staff. So
for the fee change,
program or process that we're in right now, we have a pretty limited window.
Sure.
If we want a January 1 effective date. So I would suggest that if there's a specific fee that, like we're talking about, that's...
Don't hold up
everything. Now, we normally put community development as a separate...
But I am here because detached is a living space. You know, it's kind of like some people are building that garage to live in while they're building their house.
So I would suggest that maybe we strike that from the total packet, address that as a separate process, you know, in a few weeks or however long it takes to move through that and look at the policy and the implications and ramifications, so that the other fees don't get held up because of this one. And that's as a suggestion or as a
Let's deal with
as an idea.
So if you don't mind, I'll go through them real quick, what we do have here.
I think he only has one fee, right?
Oh, Robbie,
how many
one?
That's fast.
Yeah.
All right, the paving security fee, this was just brought up because a couple times a year we'll have some folks who don't want to put in their driveway before building the house for cosmetic reasons, and that's okay if they want to. So this fee is to capture our time for setting up the security and additional inspection once we go back out to make sure that it's not eroding back towards fog line, those kinds of things, because without a paved driveway, it will start gradually working its way back towards the road. So 3 times a year is what we've got. I think that's probably a lot. It'll be once a year, maybe. It's usually folks with more money than they know what to do with, and they want to wait until the house is done to put in a driveway so it's pristine black when they're done. So that's what we're trying to capture. Customer service based.
So if they want to forego paving their approach till after construction, we're charging them an additional...
We're holding a security, creating a security.
Do we give them that security deposit back?
It would go, yes, or go
or
towards...
Or goes against
it, yeah, we'll come up with an average cost of a driveway of that type, and if it comes in under, then they would be refunded the difference.
Oh, well, that sounds reasonable.
But at least it gives us a hook there.
They have to pave the approach?
If it's going on to a arterial or collector, they do, yeah.
I like that.
It's rare, but it's occasional, yeah. I thought
that was the rule on, like, my parents' place, the case I laid.
Had
we're
to
the only one.
Yeah. And the argument got to be we don't want to do it early because of all the cement trucks, and the bigger trucks are going to come in and beat the snot out of it. So that's fair. So,
well, the balance of that is that they're beating the snot out of our shoulder.
And the fallback will be they will have to do 2 driveway approaches. The first, we're going out to inspect for a gravel driveway to make sure it's put in right and doesn't track on the road, and then we'll do a 2nd driveway approach to get it finalized and capped with the pavement.
That seems reasonable. It's the right thing. It's cost of doing construction. And I would want to do that. If I were doing it, I don't want to have mine paved and...
Broken in?
Yeah. It was destroyed in the first 3 months.
Mm-hmm. 200 sounds reasonable.
And I think, we put 3 just for a number to catch. I bet it'll be once or twice a year tops. It's pretty rare.
Well, I'm not a person with more money than I know what to do with. I like something to
last. I want functionality, yeah.
And if you do the hardest work on it in the beginning... That's not a good way.
Cement trucks do more damage.
They really do. Is that one okay?
Yep.
Okay. I'm going to run before the earthquake gets.
Gives you so much fun.
I want to see the pictures.
Mine actually, I think, are pretty easy to understand. But I'll walk you through them real quick. So my changes,
how are you on time?
Okay.
So my changes are in green. The first one I'll come to is line 9. You see bed and breakfast is crossed out. That's because, last year, bed and breakfast are a type 3 permit. So last year, we, instead of charging $2,000 for a bed and breakfast, we dropped it to $500. And this year, we added farm stays to be like a bed and breakfast. So rather than keep farm stays under bed and breakfast, what we did is, since it is a type 3, if you drop down, you'll just see clarification between a conditional use permit, type 1, type 2, type 3, where the bed and breakfast is...
So you're just consolidating. You're not changing it. It's not going up or down.
No fees changing. Just cleaning up our fee schedule. The same, and if you go to line 18, which I believe Commissioner Morgan just mentioned, the detached living space, that is what we just approved with the housing amendments, which is, I don't want to say an accessory dwelling unit, the ADU, but it's what we approved. But we didn't have a fee for that. So a house is a $300 fee, so we're making it very clear that the new detached living space that we authorized has a fee assigned to it, so it's $300. Number 23, dwelling...
Is that reflective of the time to review?
I have to be honest with you. $300 on a house is I don't think adequately covers what we do for a house. But if that's what we do on a house, that's what we'll do on the ADU.
But it says a dwelling is 2,500.
No.
No, so, I'm looking at line 23 and line 22,
yes,
dwellings
yes.
for farm and non-farm are 2,500.
Yes, that's something different. So
they're not houses.
Houses, a general house, like if you're in an RR, by the code, a house shall be authorized by a development permit. So a development permit is $300. We want it very clear for people that the detached living space is $300.
Okay.
Now, when you drop down to the other ones, these are state rules that you have, farm dwellings, non-farm dwellings. There's these processes which take months to get those type of permits. They're state-regulated permits. And we are not changing the fee schedule on that. But what happened is the assessor asked that we set that when you issue a permit, instead of just putting farm dwelling or in an ag zone, she said, could you please specify, instead of putting dwelling in a farm zone, I'm sorry, could you please specify when you issue that permit if it's a farm dwelling or a non-farm dwelling? So the change you see there is creating a category called non-farm dwelling for the assessor. The fee doesn't change. It's just making it clear that when Connie, because Connie assesses them different. By statute, she has to assess them mm-hmm. different. So this is just making it easier for the assessor to communicate or see what we're authorizing. Number 30, what happens is oftentimes we have people asking for a hearing, but we don't have, what do you charge them? A good example is Caleb LaPlante came in with the Balloon Fest. He's like, I'm not going to be at 3,000 people, Julie, but I want a hearing. And I'm like, well, Caleb, we don't have anything for a hearing. So what we did is we looked through the fee schedule, and if you go to variances, you have variance with hearing and without. That difference is $750. So we thought, well, if you just want a hearing, that's $750 by deduction. And there are places in the ordinance where you can just request a hearing for stuff, but we don't have any fee established for it. So
So the $750 is purely because of that other one, and that's the difference with and without a hearing?
Yes.
But the amount of work in that situation of preparing for a hearing probably justified the $750.
Yeah, I'm not sure that like a Caleb LaPlante example is a real, it's very good apples and apples, but it may not be as far as
staff time.
I don't think we spent that kind of time on his hearing. And
well,
it was more about PR element rather than a requirement of the code, right?
Well, his was an interesting case because he also wanted variances. And the way the code is written, he couldn't go for a variance for what he wanted. So we treated it as a hearing before the Planning Commission. And the code says if there's something you want that's not addressed by code, you go for a hearing before the Planning Commission. So that's how we treated it. But there's no fee assigned to that. But you have to make sure you're charging for all your public notifications, your mailings, your staff reports, and then the Planning Commission members. So,
do you have anything in your thing to say up to, you know, like we can assign, if it was something that we needed to notify all of the Illinois Valley, you know, that's a substantially more of a cost than something that's much, much smaller, and it shouldn't be an apples and apples, because
a tiered notification.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, like,
did we notice for Caleb's?
I'm not sure it would all be the people around, and but you know that does bring up a good point. What if somebody would come in here today and ask for a text amendment to allow brothels in RR? Okay.
Well, they don't get to petition for text amendments. They petition the board, and we put forth text amendments. The public doesn't get to.
They
do
can
that.
Legally, they can request that. The public can come in and ask a text amendment, but in that case, as we know with 56 or with the recent one that we dealt with on the marijuana. We would have to notify everybody in our ordinance is not set up to accommodate that.
We don't have to accommodate a request for a text amendment. Their code doesn't require that, or people would be doing it all the time, and nobody has ever done that since they've petitioned the board to file for it. Well, maybe that's because they're skirting the cost of it.
They do, because it's like $5,000.
Yes.
That's why they're going to the board instead of doing it themselves.
Right.
But technically they could.
And I'm sure it costs us $5,000 to change.
Absolutely.
Something.
Okay. It does.
So that doesn't really answer your question about the hearings officer on the tiered or the scaled level as far as the cost.
Just a hearing. We don't have a hearings officer.
Sorry.
We don't have a hearings officer.
But a hearing, the cost of a hearing should be relevant to the
so
cost of
preparing.
So I can
come back with a scaled hearing if you'd like.
Well,
right now we have nothing.
Just making sure it's broken out that's yeah. You in your mind can justify or we can justify. All of these have to be based on cost of service. That's the driving force of assigning these, especially in your program as a general fund.
What about hearing neighborhood, hearing district, hearing county, you know, or something like that? If the notifications are at those different levels, that you would have to cover the cost.
Okay, so we can...
That would be proportional to, like, the size and scope of a particular request.
We'll look at that and bring that back. When do you need that by, Arthur?
Well, next Thursday, if that works out for you.
Okay. Home occupation type 1, type 2, just clarifications on that so people understand when they... The way the code is written, it says when you get those, you also have to get a development permit. So this is just a clarification, or I should say a note amendment to our fee schedule that says, hey, don't forget to remind them that they need this rather than come back later and all once they find out they need that schedule. Number 33 you'll see is where you see that bed and breakfast stuff. Home occupation use is not listed. So we have, currently there's a fee for, there's a fee, but this is, again, just clarifying the chart so people understand what they're charging for, especially
the notice is particularly helpful. I'm being facetious. Can you give me an example of something that's not listed in a type 1, 2, or 3 that would be?
Sure.
We have something in
our... manufacturing.
Don't we have something in our code that is... like when you do those industrial zone things, it's like uses. So even if it isn't listed, you assign it to something that's
similar.
Close in nature, right?
Yes, we do. We do. The difference here is when the board created that home occupation section in 2012, I think it was, they added this thing that said home occupation use is not listed. And they said we're to charge.
Well, I was in my second year there. You can take something out if you choose. If it doesn't make sense, there's a lot.
I would love. I will eventually rework the whole home occupation thing, but that's
separate.
Not yeah. But anyways, we assigned the fee to it. But when you have new staff currently working with a fee schedule, you want it very clear what they're doing. So this is explaining to staff that hey, that $1,000 fee that was established for home occupations, that's for the use is not listed section. So I'm showing you everything we're changing that we see as well. That doesn't change the fee. It's just explaining to you that that's how we want it to read. And again, just being transparent on the whole thing.
For me, that was that thing that was just crazy, you know, home, whatever it was, you know, I don't know.
Salt manufacturing is the best example we had this year. So lot validation, it's just, again, clarification. Staff. Mass gathering, you'll see, so last year we clarified there was a small and a large. We are looking at having a small, a medium, and a large. As you know, we're looking at we're reviewing other counties' mass gathering ordinances. Leah's been looking at the mass gathering ordinances, and most of them will have a small, medium, and large. So this coming year, we're hoping to bring an ordinance forward that breaks down small, medium, and large. So this actually creates that medium category.
I see it as the small category. Isn't that new? It says new category under small.
What you see as new under there is, in parentheses, 100 to 500.
Oh.
So it was 100 to 3,000.
The 100 threshold?
The code does. The code goes 100 to 3,000 is
$2,000. Right.
And... So we know that there's the small, and then there's the large.
I have a family dinner, and I might have 100 people.
I'm just
code exempts that. Family events.
Okay.
We're covered. But anyway, so it's not fair to charge a medium event the full price of a large, especially if they're just getting started. So you will see a mass gathering ordinance come forward that has a three-tier.
No. Not because they're just getting started. The first year is the one you need to charge the most for.
So it must work.
It's getting it, once it's refined, it's no big deal. So don't say that first year. You're just being too generous or, you know, that's the year that's the heavy lift. You're having to think of all the things that they've never thought of because they've never done this before. So I get your philanthropic whatever, but no, the first year's the lift.
Yeah, I've organized events And my only counter on that is you don't have the money for $2,000 the first year. So it's hard. So anyway, so we want to work with people, right? We want to encourage them to have events. So medical hardship renewal.
It's not sure why it's highlighted.
It is highlighted because that is something that may or may, we're watching, and it may or may not go away with this ADU. We're going to try and convert people over to that accessory dwelling unit.
So where it says proposed to delete 45 and 46.
Yeah. That's probably means potentially if the tax amendment goes through.
If, and if we can get rid of those medical hardship renewals. So.
Okay.
48, non-conforming use, expansion, or alteration. You're just making it match the language in the code there. And then I see here, some of them I don't have highlighted in pink, 53, 54. We're just adding the word cluster subdivision because that's a new use that we're now allowing. Putting it under the same as a PUD. 59, 60, 61. That is something that we did last year. If you remember, Commissioner Hare, you had suggested a tiered system, so we came up with that. This is just adding language so staff understands. When you're looking at under four lots, it's really called a partition. If you're looking at more than three, it's really called a subdivision. And that's all state law. It's clarifying again for staff when they use this that if somebody comes in for a partition, that's what you're charging, your subdivision, et cetera. Technical plan review, 69, what you see there is we are cutting out the fee on that erosion control stormwater management technical plan review because we are allowing that letter to come in now. And the other thing is if an engineer is reviewing it, why are we charging to review it? We're not engineers. We should not be charging. That addresses Mr. Dent's concern as well and part of his concern. And then with the variance, you'll see right now that we currently, and I'm thinking marijuana here specifically because this was a discussion that it was too expensive, but if somebody right now would come in for a variance without a hearing, we charge $2,000. It does not cost $2,000 to review that. That is staff or myself reviewing it and making a decision when there's no hearing involved. So we'd like to drop that to $500. That also encourages more people to go ahead with variances. And then we have variance with the hearing. We believe that it's too expensive. We'd like to drop it to $1,250.
She's trying to remind us that in 1 minute, that we're supposed to do the shake alert right now.
The meeting will be over in 1 minute because then I'm going to have to go out on time for that. Who do you want for voting delegation? We'll have to sort of review this. Are you almost done? You're done.
Except for what came up yesterday with Augustus and the Water Master. Real quick, I'll just present it to you, and I'll work with Arthur on it. But
sure.
The Water Master said if you're doing a certificate of compliance and they are being required to do stuff, they cannot use their current staff for that. We're going to have to collect the fee and look at doing what Jackson County does, and that is have a county-sponsored Water Master, and the fees you collect for those go into an account that would pay that person. So I can send you details on it. I wanted to make you aware of it for transparency purposes, but... I'll work with her.
Okay, so
do you want to be the delegate?
That's fine.
Of TLC. Okay, I don't need to. You're one of five that does one, and we don't have any. Say we're the lowest in the total.
Can I hand out a parks fee, or do you want that handed out?
Sure.
Your liaison. It's just they're just updating their fees.
Julie and Arthur, you're going to have to stick around to get under the table because we have to give a picture. So sit.
And that's that one for Wendy. And that'll be part of the next week's
great
packet.
So, and Julie Thomas is okay for CEDC?
Great.
Okay. So with that, we are adjourned at 10:18.